Now, as ever, a Teen Wolf fanfiction by Venus Envy. Chapter 3. It's strange to Stiles that, in all of this, Derek Hale would actually feel like an anchor to him. Just being near him helps to calm Stiles, something he would have never thought possible before today. Stiles walks in Derek's wake, relishing the small comfort of familiarity and ease that seemed to emanate from him. The Hale house looks nothing like Stiles had imagined it, having only seen it in its burned-out state of desolation. It's designed to look like an old colonial-style home, but the dusty blue-colored siding gives away the newness of it. White trim framing all the windows and doors adds a pleasant and welcome feel that Stiles has never really associated with the property before, despite his recent friendship with Derek. Stiles walks up the front steps behind Derek, focusing all his energy on calming his frayed nerves before the door opens. It's like stepping into the scene of a movie. Outside was silent, almost to an uncomfortable degree, but inside the Hale house, there's noise and constant motion. No one even seems to notice Stiles is there. They all just buzz by in one direction or another, hurrying to get where they're going. There's a young woman with dark, wavy hair and chocolate brown eyes. She smiles at Derek and ruffles his hair as she passes by, skipping up the stairs. "My aunt," Derek says, by way of explanation. "She treats us all like we're her adorable little puppies." Stiles snorts with laughter, amused at his own secret knowledge of the truth of that statement. "What's going on, Derek?" Stiles turns toward the voice along with Derek. "This is Stiles. I found him sitting outside on the preserve by himself." The girl tosses her hair over her shoulder and looks Stiles up and down. A perfectly manicured eyebrow arches when her radiant gray eyes meet his. "I'm Laura," she says, reaching out to shake Stiles' hand. An image flashes through Stiles' mind like a strobe, and he shoves it away along with the nausea it brings. This is Laura, alive, whole, beautiful. It's hard to pull his gaze away from her. His mind is having an extremely difficult time coping with the contradiction of vision and memory. When he realizes she's looking at him in a strange and assessing way, he does manage to cast his gaze elsewhere. When Stiles looks back, the girl is gone, and it's Derek who's giving him an odd look. It isn't anything Stiles isn't used to, though. Even in his younger form, Derek's eyes are familiar and comforting to Stiles. It's like he can see for miles into them, years even, and know that, even in all the strangeness surrounding him right now, he always has a place there. He's used to Derek's glares, threatening expressions, even his curious and questioning ones. Derek leads them through the kitchen door, and again, Stiles is taken aback by the cheerfulness and life that fills the space, in contrast to what his memory supplies as normal for this room. He's been here before, in Derek's kitchen. He's seen the smoke-blackened walls and peeling paper, the char marks that smudge away all recognition of home and life within these walls. This room is nothing like the image in Stiles' mind. Pale, cream-colored wallpaper with tiny floral print covers one entire wall and stops at the molding halfway up the rest of them. There's a huge, solid table in front of a curtained window, at least 10 chairs surrounding it, a vase of fresh flowers in the center. The light and airy feeling of the room draws Stiles' attention to just how suffocating it is in its actual state, in his future reality. There's a small boy in a pillowcase cape at the table, pulling out place settings. Stiles thinks he can't be more than 5 or 6 years old, and another pang of sorrow hits him like a punch to the gut. All of these people, every one of these viable and animated members of Derek's family, are all gone. "Mom," Derek says, stepping up to the kitchen counter beside a small woman in a knee-length skirt. She turns to face her son, eyes alight with happiness just at the sight of him, and again Stiles feels his heart plummet to his stomach. She looks so much like Derek, it's unsettling. He grips the edge of the island counter to keep himself upright, taking a slow and steadying breath as Derek, again, explains how he found Stiles in the woods by the creek. This time, Derek tells the full version of the story. The woman steps over to Stiles, tilting her head as she examines him. She gives nothing away as to what she's really doing, but Stiles knows she's scenting him, assessing the level of threat that's been brought to her home. One eyebrow arches in amusement, and she glances back at Derek before returning her gaze to Stiles. There's a small twitch of a smile at the corner of her mouth, disappearing quickly on the edge of a fractured huff. "My son is always so trusting," she says. "For all we know, you could be a murderer, a serial killer. Mom, Derek cuts in, exasperated. She looks Stiles up and down, much in the same way Laura had just done. All right, a severely underfed serial killer, she adds with a wink and a small smile. Stiles looks from her to Derek and back again before replying. I'm not a killer, or dangerous at all, he says, and he hopes she can tell the truth of what he's saying. All right, she says, patting Stiles on the cheek affectionately, her hand hot against his cold skin. He can stay for dinner, she tells Derek. Stepping back over to her place by the stove, she picks up a spoon and resumes stirring. Lord knows someone should be feeding him, but then we'll have to figure out where he belongs. Your mother must be worried sick. Stiles actually feels the carefully constructed expression of casual interest melt from his face, replaced by one of sadness. Derek's mom pauses in her task of stirring the bubbling sauce and glances over at Stiles again. No name, no home, she says, eyes narrowed slightly in question. No mother, Stiles finishes for her. Derek grabs Stiles by the wrist, an act that sends a sudden wave of tranquility through Stiles' whole body and leads him back out of the kitchen. Derek, his mother calls as they reach the door. Tell Uncle Peter I need to speak with him, please. Stiles' heart stutters in his chest, a mixture of fear and curiosity bubbling up and over the emotional dam he's tried so hard to construct. Derek recognizes it this time. Stiles knows he does. They pause outside the kitchen door, Derek's fingers still wrapped around Stiles' wrist, and Derek just stares at him. Stiles' pulse is jumping beneath Derek's fingers, and he can't help but wonder if Derek is holding him there on purpose, if he's just waiting for a sign like that. What? Stiles asks, trying for nonchalance. Derek arches an eyebrow questioningly. Do you know my Uncle Peter? Stiles shakes his head. No, I mean, I know an Uncle Peter, but not... He lets his sentence trail off as Derek leads him up the stairs. It isn't fully a lie. Stiles does know Uncle Peter, but the version of him he's met is nothing like the friendly family guy he was told Peter had been before the fire. Stiles' dad is right. He really has no sense of self-preservation. He's in a house surrounded by what he assumes to be a dozen werewolves, all of whom are more than capable of tearing his head off at the drop of a hat, and he's allowing himself to be led around like a puppy on a leash. Wait in here, Derek gestures toward a door about halfway down the upstairs hall. I'll be right back. Stiles watches him walk away for a brief moment before opening the door and stepping inside. He closes the door behind him and leans against it as he looks around. Derek's room isn't unlike that of any other teenage boy, which, in itself, is strange enough. Despite the unprecedented sense of calm he gets around him, this only reminds Stiles that he really doesn't know this Derek. There are clothes strewn around the room, baseball trophies lining shelves, awards of achievement from both school and sports littering the walls, an acoustic guitar leaning against the bed, but probably most surprising is Derek's collection of books. There seems to be no real rhyme or reason to their placement, just stacks and stacks of books in every corner, everything from Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time to well-worn copies of the first four Harry Potter books. Stiles is sitting on the edge of Derek's rumpled bed, a blanket wrapped around him to fend off the residual chill he's still feeling, thumbing through The Hobbit when Derek finally returns 20 minutes later. You read a lot of books? Derek asks, nodding towards the one in Stiles' hand. Oh no, I mostly judge them by their covers. Derek laughs, and it's a sound Stiles doesn't think he'd ever be able to hear enough of. My mom's worried you're a runaway. Uncle Peter talked her into letting you stay, but they're both convinced someone's got to be looking out for you. Stiles stares down at the carpet beneath his feet, takes a deep, steady breath, and nods. I hope someone is. So, what's your story? Derek begins digging around behind his desk, hooking wires into a PlayStation. Stiles shrugs, even though Derek isn't looking at him. He hasn't thought this through very carefully, and he has no idea what to say. He wonders how the truth would go over with this Derek. I'm not supposed to be here, is what Stiles settles on for a start. I woke up this morning, confused and lost with no memory of how I ended up in the woods. I know this place, but it isn't the same. It's a mess of words that spill out, and Stiles knows he's not making any sense, but it's the closest he can get to the truth without telling Derek everything. So what, you're like from another dimension or something? Derek asks, surprisingly calm as he tosses a PlayStation controller to Stiles. Maybe that's it, Stiles replies, only half joking. Sounds like lacunar amnesia to me, like selective memory loss, Derek side-eyes Stiles. If you think someone might be looking for you, why not go to the sheriff? It's a good question that Stiles has no idea how to answer. He takes another calming breath as the opening credits for Grand Theft Auto start to roll across the screen. Derek plops down beside him on the edge of the bed. They play together with a strange sense of ease and comfort for the next hour and a half. Derek asks intermittent questions here and there, mostly personal. What does Stiles do for fun? Mostly just try to stay alive. What are his friends like? Rowdy, wild, amazing. Does he like school? No, but he's good at it. And, in exchange, Derek responds to his own questions for Stiles' benefit. Turns out he's only just learning to play guitar. He really has read all these books, and baseball is no longer a big part of Derek's life like it had been when he was younger. He smiles a little, as if he's joking or waiting for Stiles to tease him about it, when he tells Stiles about a project he's working on. It's a list of 18 things he wants to accomplish before turning 18 in November. Stiles doesn't laugh about it, though. He just listens as Derek names off a few of what Stiles assumes to be the less personal goals. Reading all the books on the 100 greatest books of the 20th century list. He's made a pretty sizable dent in that one. Learn to cook. He's now mastered the art of toaster oven waffles. Get accepted into Berkeley, because he wants to go to college close to his family. And then a knock at Derek's door draws them out of their strange little bubble of comfort they've created. A little girl opens the bedroom door and pokes her head inside, a curtain of dark hair making only one big green eye visible as she studiously avoids Stiles' gaze and shyly tells Derek it's time for dinner. "Tell them we'll be down in a minute, Cora," Derek says. The girl nods and disappears. They take turns washing their hands in the bathroom sink, Stiles taking the extra time to wash his arms and face as well. He grips the edge of the basin and watches as murky water swirls down the drain. "You ready for this?" Derek asks him. Stiles nods, drying his face with a towel Derek hands him, then follows him out the door and down the stairs. The house is practically vibrating with energy, people talking and laughing, plates and utensils clinking as they serve up dinner. Stiles thinks this must be what it's like for normal families on Thanksgiving. For years now, family gatherings for Stiles have consisted of him, his dad, Scott, Mrs. McCall, and a couple of other people from the Beacon Hill Sheriff's Department. Not exactly family, but close enough. The room goes quiet when Derek and Stiles step in, all 10 of its occupants turning to look at their guest. Stiles hones in on Uncle Peter almost instantly. He's sitting at the dinner table next to the puppy aunt who had scruffled Derek's hair earlier, smiling like Stiles has never seen before. It isn't sardonic or baleful in any way. He just seems genuinely happy. Stiles raises his hand in an awkward wave to the group and takes a step closer to Derek. A few people notice the unconscious move and laugh a little. "Come in, boys, we don't bite," says a man with short, spiky hair. He smiles at them and gestures toward the open seats at the end of the table. "Everyone," Derek says, "this is Stiles. Stiles, this is my family. Uncle Peter, Aunt Janet, and Mom, who you met. My dad, Daniel," Derek points to the spiky-haired man beside his mother. "Grandma Iris," the older woman with short red hair, blows Stiles a kiss, meriting a hearty laugh from the group. "And all these kids we usually just refer to by number." "I'm number 6," calls the little boy who had been setting the table before. They're the two sisters Stiles has already met, either in this life or his future one, Laura and Cora, and two more young boys who appear to be twins. Dinner goes on without a hitch, everyone talking casually about their respective days or the upcoming school/work week. There's even a bit of talk about the space shuttle news from this morning. It isn't nearly as awkward as Stiles had anticipated, the whole family seeming to welcome him in as though he's actually part of it, rather than just a stranger one of them found alone in the woods. "You pick up a lot of strays around here?" Stiles asks Derek, leaning in as if it's a secret joke, even though he's well aware that most, if not all, of the other people at the table can hear him just fine. "Nope, you're the first," replies Derek. "So, Stiles," it's Derek's father who's speaking now. Stiles wipes his sweaty palms on his lap and looks over at the man. "Are you a runaway?" It's a blunt question, and Stiles can tell he isn't joking. "No, I didn't run away," Stiles replies. He's pretty sure it's the truth. He'd never been one to run away from the fights before, even if he was the only fragile being involved. Uncle Peter excuses himself from the table, kissing his wife on the head as he picks up his dishes. "He doesn't really remember much," Derek intervenes, eyeing his uncle warily as the man leaves the room. "Well," Derek's mom says, "we should definitely call someone. Did you hit your head, dear? Are you hurt?" Stiles runs a hand down the back of his head, checking again for injuries he already knows aren't there. "No, I don't think so." "He doesn't want to go to the sheriff," Derek says. "Of course he doesn't." Derek's father crosses his arms over his chest and stares at Stiles. "Honey," his wife says, patting his arm. "Were you sent here by someone, Stiles?" "Daniel, that's enough." Derek's mom glares at her husband, and Stiles is almost certain he sees a flash of red in her eyes, but it's gone before he can decide if it was his imagination or not. "How old did you say you are, Stiles?"
"I'm 17.
"Who do you live with?"
"My father," replied Stiles. "My mom died when I was just a kid."
Derek's mom tisks and tilts her head sympathetically. "You're still just a kid," she says as she stands up and begins to clear the table. Derek jumps up quickly to help her. "So what if he is a runaway?" Aunt Janet says to Daniel, fingers laced together under her chin as she smiles over at the man. "Weren't you about 16 or 17 when you ran away from home for 4 days? Your mom wasn't very happy with you, but she told you that sometimes we all need a bit of space to clear our heads." Stiles wants to tell them, wants to just lay all his cards out on the table and see what happens. But he thinks, given the strange connection he seems to have made with Derek in such a short period of time, maybe he should just tell him in private, rather than leading the whole family to believe he's an escaped mental patient. He wonders what, if any, ripples he'll cause for the future by divulging his secret. But again, he tells himself the damage must already be done, since he's sitting here with the family now. Stiles doesn't want to think about the effects of that. He doesn't want to imagine that his presence here and now may inadvertently change the future. What if, in real time, Stiles and Derek aren't friends anymore? What if Scott was never bitten, or Derek never came back to Beacon Hills? It's all too much, and Stiles feels tears prickling behind his eyes, and his hands tremble in his lap. What has he done? He looks over at Derek, unable to hide his fears, lips parting, but no words coming. The inquiry dies down, for which Stiles is exceedingly grateful, and he excuses himself to help Derek wash dishes and clean up the kitchen. The adults leave the room while the smaller children play a few rounds of Uno at the now-abandoned dinner table. Again, Stiles is quietly amazed by the normality of it all. "My dad didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable," Derek says later on, when they're back in his room alone. "He just questions everyone's motives. He's sort of the voice of reason of the family."
"It's understandable," replies Stiles. "I mean, I'm sure I'd be curious about a strange kid wandering into my house and sitting at the dinner table with me and my dad."
Derek nods. "How long has it just been you and your dad?" He kneels down beside the bed and begins shuffling books and things around to clear an area on the floor to make room for the pull-out bed he slides out from under his own. They hadn't discussed Stiles staying the night, but Derek knows he hasn't got anywhere else to go, even if he doesn't know exactly why. Stiles appreciates the effort Derek put into carefully wording his question so as not to pry, can tell he wants to know more.
8 years, Stiles replies. He's grateful that Derek doesn't press the topic, because after having actually seen her today for the first time in 8 years, Stiles is barely able to hold himself together just thinking about it.
"I'm sorry," Derek says. "I can't imagine what that must have been like. I don't know what I'd do if I lost my mom." Grief clutches at Stiles as he swallows around the lump in his throat and looks down at his own fingers, twisted together in his lap. Derek prepares the guest bed for Stiles beside his own, but neither of them sleep. They stay up all night long playing video games and talking about books and movies until the sun paints the walls of Derek's bedroom pink and gold.